morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 14th of January. Monday at 9 means all things political. Immigration reform, guns, climate change, the battle over the defense secretary. How much cooperation will there be between members of Congress and the president? Those are just a few of the things that we will be discussing this hour of the program with Professor Charles Lipson, professor of political science who specializes in international relations and international political history. He is co-director of the program on international politics, economics, and security, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Lipson. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email for you to use that is talk@wpr.org. And you are welcome to leave messages for us on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Charles Lipson, hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And it really is cold. Your reporter said it. I want you to know that even down here in Chicago, it is chilly.
I know. I was in Chicago yesterday. It was really chilly. But it's been mild. It brings to mind climate. So let's talk about that, because I was going to bring that topic up. There was a report, as you know, the nation's third climate assessment report was released. And it did show, even though it's cold today, Professor Lipson, that the climate is changing. And the report says, primarily as a result of human activities. There are some press reports and climate assessment reports that show that this is a very serious subject that we better do something about, and darn quickly.
You are absolutely right. Did you see the reports today, Kathleen, about Beijing?
No, I did not.
There is just a cloud of smoke over Beijing, and there may be other cities in China. In fact, China's building about one coal-fired power plant a week.
Wow.
I'm not trying to do any China bashing, quite the contrary. I just want to begin by saying that climate change is, you are absolutely right, a very serious problem. I think that although there are people who contest it, I think that the evidence is not only that the climate is changing, but that an important reason for the change is human, namely the release of carbons into the atmosphere. But the problem is that diminishing the release of carbons into the atmosphere has to be done on a global basis.
Yes.
In order to have any impact. Second, some of the biggest polluters are China and India, and they do not want to participate at this stage in anything that would cut back on their ability to generate power through any source, through the cheapest sources, which are coal. And finally, that according to the studies that I've read, even fairly extensive cutbacks are projected to have relatively small impact on the amount of on temperatures in the atmosphere. So, in other words, you pay a lot and you don't get very much for it. So there are collective action problems, as we say in political science. A lot of people are contributing to the pollution, and if some people don't cut back, the others don't want to. And it's very expensive to cut back without getting much impact for it.
So you don't see there being any major push to address this front and center during this year?
I do. I do see front and center. I think it's a very big deal in wealthy countries. And I think it will become a bigger deal in rapidly growing countries like China. But I think so. If you look at our atmosphere in the United States, it's important to step back. Have you ever seen pictures of what cities like Pittsburgh used to look like?
Sure.
And our cities and our lakes and our atmosphere in the United States now is just much, much cleaner than it used to be. And that's because of of two things. One is a shift from manufacturing industries to what you and I do, which is we don't turn out steel. We're in service industries. And the other big thing is that rich countries are willing to pay for better environments. But poorer countries that don't already have cars, don't have air conditioning, may not even have refrigerators in many houses, those countries are not so willing.
Well, we'll see what happens with this issue, but it seems as though it needs to be addressed. It's just hard for us as a world to address this issue.
It is, and it fits under a general category that people call common pool resources, where there's something like the conventional example is a pasture that's grazed on by all the cattle, and if one person owns it, it doesn't get overgrazed, but if everybody can put their cattle there, it gets overgrazed, and that's a problem for things like the ocean. It's not just, we tend to think about global warming and so forth, but it's not just global warming. There's deforestation. There's overfishing in the oceans. There are a number of problems, and what I would say is that we've actually, it's not all a depressing story. In countries like the United States, across Western Europe and the like, we've been willing to pay money. We've been doing a lot of good things in terms of the environment. Our cars are much less polluting than they used to be. For every additional dollar of GDP growth, we emit a lot. We use a lot less energy. We emit a lot less pollution. But the world is not all in the same wealthy position that listeners in Madison and in Milwaukee and in Green Bay are. And as a result, it's a real problem. And even if the world were wealthy, there might be problems in getting everybody to pitch in.
Let's move to immigration reform. We can always return to all of these topics, so we're asking the audience to just be with us as we talk about a few major issues, and feel free to call in with your thoughts on any of them. Word is that the president is working on a plan, and he would like to introduce it very soon. We may get details in the State of the Union address to overhaul the immigration system in the United States. Is this an issue? Because it would behoove everybody to have a plan that works, and we haven't looked at it seriously for so many years. Will we see bipartisan cooperation and an overhaul of the immigration system?
I think we will see an overhaul of the immigration system. I want to start with that great Yogi Berra quote that it's hard to predict, especially about the future.
Right.
But the fact is, there's tremendous desire for it. The second thing is, and this is something to really bear in mind, when the president is not only reelected, but reelected on campaign promises, he has a lot of capital to spend in his first year and a half before the, I hate to mention the word, the next midterm election.
My. Right.
Thumbs up. Oh, Lord. But the fact is, he campaigned on this. And then there's one more really important reason. One of the themes, I think, that you see from President Obama in the lead-up to his second term, it's hard to think that he's not in his second term since the election, but in a formal sense, he's not. But in the lead-up to it, you can see that he's picking issues that put Republicans in a very difficult position. And I think, and we'll get to other elements of this later, but when a party loses and loses as badly as the Republicans did this time, granted President Obama didn't get as big a share of the vote and didn't get it as much as he did in the first time, but this was a chance that the Republicans had seen as a golden opportunity not only to win the election for president, but to pick up more seats in the Senate, and they did not do that. When the incumbent wins like this, you see the losing party begin to rip itself apart. That's the harsh way of putting it. The gentler way of putting it is reassess what they want to emphasize and what kind of party they want to be.
Yes.
We'll talk later about Colin Powell and some other things. But the fact is, the Republicans are aware that Hispanics are the most rapidly growing portion of the electorate. If you want to be a majority party 20 years from now, or maybe even 10 years from now, you need to pick up a substantial portion of the Hispanic vote. And the immigration policy that the administration will produce is not only about solving an immigration problem, but about locking in a reliable constituency for the foreseeable future and denying it to your opponent.
Mm-hmm. Guns. The vice president has met with all kinds of people, all kinds of various groups. Tomorrow he will issue recommendations from the task force to the president. And then what?
And then you will see a Donnybrook in the Congress. A couple of points to make. The first is that the president and Vice President Biden have been very wise to move as rapidly as they have on this, because the effects of the Newtown shooting on the public willingness to on public support for gun control are something that could fade quickly, and they want to strike while the iron is hot. But the fact is, there are still a lot of congresspeople who do not want to move in a strong way toward gun control. The second point is that within the confines of the Second Amendment and court decisions about what can be done with regard to it, it's not clear that any of the proposals will have much of an impact, with the possible exception of what they might do on mental health or something. The proposals, even if they include all of the things that we've been reading in the press that Joe Biden wants to put forward, would not have stopped the Newtown shooting. They would have told us maybe who owned guns prior to that or something like that. But the fact that this could end up stymied in the Congress will also mean that you will see more. You're more likely to see executive orders and regulations
right.
issued than actual laws passed.
I was wondering about that. Do you know, Professor Lipson, can the president make an executive order saying that that there needs to be a background check for every gun that's sold? Can he do that or not?
On all of those things, it will be immediately contested in the courts.
I see.
I think one of the things that's been pretty surprising to many people about the Obama presidency is how much it has relied on executive orders. This was something that there was a lot of criticism of the Bush administration for, and including criticism in the first presidential campaign that President Obama ran, and yet his presidency has used a lot of these orders. But when the orders are on controversial issues, you'll see them tested in the courts. The big issue, of course, is going to be on all these regulations that are going to come out on health care, too.
You mentioned Colin Powell. Let's talk about him. He appeared on Meet the Press. He said there is a dark vein of intolerance in some parts of the party. What do I mean by that? He said, what I mean by that is they still sort of look down on minorities. He pointed to comments by Sarah Palin on the attacks in Benghazi. And he said, when I see a former governor say that the president is shucking and jiving, that's a racial era slave term, referring to her words. He added that the Republicans have become too preoccupied with the candidate selection process, losing sight of the group's overall message. You've got to think about what the party is actually going to represent. If it's just going to represent the far right wing of the political spectrum, I think the party is in difficulty. I'm a moderate, he said.
I think that you see a number of moderates saying things like that. And Colin Powell is highly respected nationally. I think that those are comments that resonate. I do think that someone like Colin Powell is not as prominent a member of the Republican Party as he was a few years ago. He might say that's part of the problem, but remember, he's also endorsed President Obama and not Republicans. So, and nor in the Hagel appointment, and we can talk more about that. I just want to use it as an example.
Sure.
Right now, Hagel is also one of these quote moderate Republicans, but I think he's a person who normally, when you see somebody from the other party, are seeing is the president reach across the aisle to build a broader support. I don't think that's what you're seeing here. I think what you're seeing is a president who's trying to divide the other party by showing the public that moderate members of that party are no longer conceived as in the mainstream of that party, and therefore the party itself has changed. But I don't think that the debate that Colin Powell raises is the main debate within the Republican Party. I think the bigger debate within the Republican Party is whether or not this issue about social conservatism, which on immigration and on reproductive rights or birth control and so forth, will be a prominent issue, or whether the fiscal conservative and more libertarian social side of the party will be more prominent. And that has huge ramifications, and you will see it on immigration. There is a split in the Republican Party. If you look at the Texas Republican Party, that George W. Bush came out of, Bush got a lot of Hispanic votes, and the Republican Party could not be the majority party in the state of Texas if it didn't have a substantial support within the Hispanic community. That's not the case in other southern states, and it's not the case in California. So I think you'll see a big debate within the Republican Party on a number of these issues.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go to phone calls. Professor Charles Lipson is our guest this hour. It's All Things Political. We have talked about immigration and guns and the makeup of the Republican Party, Colin Powell's comments, and we have more to talk about, but feel free to take on those issues. That's enough to start, don't you think? Or other issues that you would like to talk about with Charles Lipson, professor of political science who specializes in international relations and international political history at the University of Chicago. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We have just found out that we will be covering the presidential press conference, the last one of his term, the second hour of our program today. So a programming note for those of you who were planning on listening to the producer of the Pioneers of Television, which starts tomorrow night on PBS. We're just moving that interview to tomorrow at 10 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. President Obama is holding a press conference this morning, and NPR is providing anchored coverage of the event. This starts at 10 o'clock. Steve Inskeep will host the coverage, and there will be a number of NPR White House correspondents who will be analyzing what the president has to say. To your phone calls momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now, and let's start with Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I wanted to talk on the topic of climate change, which I think is probably our biggest challenge because the Republican Party seems to be so, at least the right-wing ideologues in the Republican Party seem so dug in and supported by big oil. And, and that includes our governor, who has claimed that he wants to be part of the sand mining boom that's happening in western Wisconsin, northern Iowa, southwestern Minnesota, and other parts of this region where millions of tons of sand and hills and our water resources are being used with the large use of diesel fuel to transport it for oil and gas, which is just contributing more to the problem. And at the same time, they're standing in the way of wind energy projects. Even if wind energy isn't the total future, it can be dissembled, but we can never replace what's being shipped out of our state. And now they're talking about exporting this sand. So I think that this is a really, really important issue and a really big mistake that our state is making.
Professor Lipson.
Well, alternative energies have been a big focus of this administration. I would just say that it's you run into a headwind. You'll pardon the metaphor here. When you're in an environment of high unemployment and big budget deficits, one of the problems with wind energy, ethanol, lots of alternatives, not almost all the alternatives, is that they're just more expensive than hydrocarbons. And they're more expensive to produce. Some of them, like wind, are erratic. They've involved very large subsidies. Now, the subsidies are best justified if what's happening is you're jump-starting an industry in which the cost curve is going down. And I would say that photovoltaics and solar is such a case, because basically it works like computers, right? The cost of the chips keeps going down. But even in that case, it's been much more expensive. And what you're seeing, and you're seeing this first all over Europe, is that all of these huge subsidies, which were encouraging alternatives, have been cut back. One way to think of it is that cheaper energy is just like a tax cut. It just stimulates the economy. So the view that that Willem voiced is widely shared. There's a tremendous amount of support for environmental stewardship, and there's a lot of resistance to mining oil sands and to fracking and all the rest, but there's also a lot of support for cheap energy. So this is one of those big political debates.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Hagel for a moment. It's not going to be completely easy sailing for Chuck Hagel, of course. We've heard criticism of him to be confirmed as Secretary of Defense. I'm wondering, maybe they're just really good buddies, but why is the president willing to head into the wind on this, to really defend Chuck Hagel? Why is this his guy?
I think that you put your finger on it. From all that we've read, they did develop a good relationship, that Hagel was very generous to President Obama when he was a new senator, and then they went on a very long foreign trip, and I think on that foreign trip, they discovered that they had a lot of shared ideas. I think the big problem that any defense secretary will face right now is that there's just huge cutbacks in the defense budget, and he thinks that Hagel agrees with him that there need to be those, and that Hagel has enough experience to put that through. I think that unless we find out more things that we haven't found out, Hagel will probably make it, but there will be a lot of a political price to pay for this. There'll be a big debate. His comments about gays, which were pretty pernicious, which he only apologized about after his nomination was floated. He's made a number of comments about Israel and about, here's his words, the Jewish lobby, his relationship, by the way, with the Jewish community in Nebraska was not very good. So there are people who raise questions there. The biggest support for Israel, of course, is the evangelical community. So the Israel, so calling it the Jewish lobby is in a sense a misnomer as well. But there are a number of issues. I still think the president ends up getting his appointment, and a lot of people in the Congress, in the Senate, which is has to approve this, want to defer to the president on the grounds that unless there is something really fundamentally wrong there or corrupt or something like that, the president gets his nominees.
Well, he is, after all, a Republican.
He's a Republican, but on the big issues of the day, and especially in his last term, he voted quite often against them. And so I think that just as if a President Romney had had appointed a Joe Lieberman and said he was a Democrat last time he ran as an independent, but only because he was defeated in the Democratic primary, and said, gee, that'll bring a lot of Democrats along, I think a lot of Democrats in Wisconsin would say, well, he was a Democrat, he was a certain kind of Democrat, but he's not really the kind of Democrats we elect here and that we think of as Democrat.
Let's go to Raymond next in River Falls. Hi, Raymond.
Good morning.
Morning. But
on this kind of the subject of Chuck Hagel and Colin Powell, you know, I stand to your screener. So these are people I've listened to for years, and while I don't agree with Powell on Iraq, I think he's way off there. I listen to people like him talk, and then I listen to people like Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh and Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain. The list goes on and on. These people sound nuts to me. And why would anybody listen to them as opposed to somebody who's, you know, who's been there, done that, and seems to be a reasonable human being rather than an ideologue crazy?
You're referring to Hagel.
I'm referring to Hagel, Colin Powell, the guy that just got run out of the Congress in Indiana. You know, people like Warren Rudman, those are people that I think are reasonable people that you know have the interests of the country at heart and not, like I say, some ideologues.
Professor
Raymond,
Hudson.
What you just said is, I think, the most important political calculation, partisan political calculation, behind the Obama administration putting forward this kind of a Republican as a nominee. You put your finger right on it. It shows up a certain stance within the Republican Party that many voters consider extreme, ideological. They think, and I think a lot of Republicans think, why the heck was Dick Lugar turned out? He was a very senior Republican, widely respected in Indiana. He lost the primary, but if it had just been a wide-open general election, he would have easily won. And as a result, the Republicans lost a seat there. And I think what you said just hit the nail right on the head.
Well, Charles Lipson, you mentioned the results of the election. The Republicans, it would appear, were very surprised by what happened, the strength of the victory for the president, the increase in seats for Democrats in the Senate and in the House. They have to be having some meetings, lots and lots of meetings, to figure out how to win again, because they're not going to put up with losing. What do they do?
That's exactly right. But there was an old joke from the 1930s by the great political commentator of the time, Will Rogers. He says, I'm not a member of any organized party. I'm a Democrat. Well, today you could say that about the Republicans.
Raymond thought that was funny.
That's good. That's good.
Well, I'm glad. I don't get credit for it. Will Rogers does. But I think today you'd be telling that about the Republican Party. I think losing parties tend to go out into the wilderness and try to sort this out. But the problem is, especially for the party that's out of power, there's not a real structure to it. There's nobody to tell the Republicans who are in Georgia or in Alaska, you've got to get on board, because otherwise there is hardly any Republican Party now in Illinois. And if we don't do something, we won't have a Republican. The Republicans in Georgia or Mississippi or Texas say, what's that got to do with me?
Raymond, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 14th of January. And our guest is Charles Lipson, professor of political science at the University of Chicago. We're talking about a number of issues with him, and you know what they are. And you can add to them if you'd like. We'd like to hear from you. We just found out, going to be carrying President Obama's press conference this morning. NPR will be providing live anchored coverage of the event, which will be the final press conference of his first term. So I would imagine you'll hear him talk about some of the issues that we have been talking about this hour with Professor Charles Lipson. That will be at 10 o'clock this morning, the show that we were going to have on Pioneers of Television, which starts tomorrow night, actually, on PBS. We are just moving ahead to tomorrow at 10 o'clock, just to keep it all straight. Let's go next to Cody in Oshkosh. Hi, Cody.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a couple comments. Number one, with clean energies, they tend to internalize all the cost, and then they need subsidies. With hydrocarbons, gasoline has at least a $10 a gallon subsidy through our war machine and whatnot else. Also, our economic model demands exponential growth but relies on limited resources. And thirdly, we maybe have cleaned up our industry here, but we import more and more, which has exported our jobs and gone to places that have low wage and low regulation. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
The $10 a gallon number is vastly exaggerated. It is true that that a lot of things we do in the world have externalities, and so burning coal, the externality is pollution, and that means in effect you're imposing a cost on other people if you engage. So it's right to say that there are some externalities in oil and gas that are imposed on other people. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about pollution. But it's not quite right to say that things that pass as green energy don't have externalities. A lot of people not only don't like the looks of giant windmills, they don't like the sound and other things. You have to put up wires to bring them in from far away where the wind is blowing, and most of all, you have to put up these big subsidies. So I'm not trying to downplay one and build up the other. I'm just trying to give you the analysis, and the striking thing to me is, in a period of relatively slow economic growth and high unemployment, there's still a lot of support for alternative energy, but that support will go up when the economy gets going better, because in some sense a green energy is a luxury good, and we buy more luxury goods when we're richer.
We haven't talked very much about money, so let's spend a few moments on that before we go back to phone calls. What are the battles ahead? How soon will they happen? What do they deal with? We've got the debt ceiling. When are we going to have a vote on that? What's the controversy? Are there other fiscal squabbles down the road?
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, yeah, yes. There are, huh?
Oh, my Lord, yes. And so I think that to step back and you're absolutely right that the debt ceiling is going to be a train wreck, It's a very predictable train wreck. And, in fact, I think it's going to be even a nastier fight than the last fight about taxes. Why is that? Well, because I think that you heard on the Sunday shows or reported in the newspapers today that are reporting on them that the Obama administration and the Democratic Party in both the House and the Senate think that the next thing they want to do is raise more taxes. Secondly, they have not, whereas the Republicans have said that the tax raising that went on people above $400,000 in the last deal was all they're going to go for. And by the way, we're now finding out that a substantial amount of those taxes are going to be on people above $250,000. That was put in the bill secretly and is only kind of now just being discovered. Okay, so that's going to be a deal. And then the second thing is that the Obama administration has still not put out a plan for dealing with the main drivers of these huge deficits. They're a plan that they basically are putting forward for the second term looks to be, let's continue to spend at very high levels. Let's try to raise taxes. You've already raised them very on people above 250 and 400. So additional taxes are going to have to come move toward the middle class. The Republicans are going to position themselves against it, and they're going to say, where are the spending cuts? And you haven't heard any discussion of that at the national level. And the Republicans have won state house after state house by making those cuts at the state level. So they think that's a strong issue for them.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls momentarily. All things political. Charles Libson, our guest, professor of political science at the University of Chicago. Our number is 800-486-8655. Lines have been busy. You can always send an email, which nobody's done yet today. So feel free to do that if you would like. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Press conference from the president, hour two of our show today. Tomorrow night at 7, we will be bringing you Governor Scott Walker's State of the State address live from the state capitol, followed by a response from Senate Minority Leader Chris Larson. Your hosts are Sean Johnson from WPR and Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television tomorrow night at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Charles Libson, professor of political science at the University of Chicago, is our guest for all things political this Monday. And our next call is Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to take issue with two things that the guest has said so far. One, concerning the so-called defeat of the Republican Party in this last election by, the re-election of Obama by what, he referred to as seemed to be a large margin. Keep in mind that I'd like to remind everyone that the Republicans still hold the House quite securely, and far from being a disorganized party, they are very disciplined and getting their members of the House, with very few exceptions, to vote the party line. So they can stymie and are, in fact, going to stymie anything that Obama wants to do. And so they have the power to basically shut the government down or shut Obama's administration down for his second term, just like they did pretty much his first term.
Do you agree with that, Charles Libson?
With some of it. I think that those are reasonable points. The president does not control both houses. The Republicans control House of Representatives. And I contrary to what most people think, I actually think that John Boehner is a very skilled political operative because he's dealing with a very fractured caucus. And we almost saw an insurrection against him by the fiscal conservatives because they don't think he's fiscal enough. And I think conservative enough on that issue. I think that for him, the issue is the one that the caller put forth, namely that while they can shut things down, they have to be careful about the political costs associated with that. You cannot run the government from the House of Representatives. That's what Newt Gingrich learned to his pain. So the Republicans did draw a large amount of votes. Obama's margin was not as great as it was the first time. He entered office with control of both houses, and he doesn't have control. He lost control of one after 2 years. What's striking to me, Kathleen, is that after President Clinton lost control, essentially for being too liberal and not being effective enough in his first 2 years, he tacked to the center. President Obama did not really do that, and what you've seen since his reelection has been a lot more in your face and to the Republicans, and I think what you see is a very skilled political operative, political White House, that's trying to find the fault lines within the Republican Party and drive stakes into them.
Thank you, Bill, so much for your call. We go to Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Good morning. I'm wondering whether the Republican Party, that is, you know, so-called established party, the people who run the party at the national level, really do want to be a majority party in the country. The big money backers, the people who own the Republican Party, are getting pretty much everything they want simply by obstructing public policy. Why would they want to be in the majority and have to be responsible for public policy which they neither care about nor are capable of?
I think that that's more cynical in terms of your view of the Republican Party than I think is warranted. First of all, I think there's a tremendous value to the office holders and to the backers of the party to be in the majority. And anybody who looks at what's happening on Social Security, taxes, health care, all of those kinds of issues, oil and gas, cannot think that the Republican Party thinks that its agenda is being put into place in this administration. It's not. They can fight against parts of it. They can hold it back. They can slow it down. But they are not getting their way. And the people who are the big money supporters understand that. Moreover, I don't think it's right to think that either party is bought and paid for by their supporters. The trial lawyers and unions and others are big supporters of the Democratic Party, but it's not true that they can sort of buy their way in. As soon as office holders think that sticking with those positions will turn them into the minority or turn that office holder out of power, then they begin to switch their positions.
Thank you very much for your call, Kurt. We go to Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi. My question was, how do we, by we, I mean government and media and people in general, determine what issue should be tackled most urgently on a worldwide basis to address the problems that we're having? And for example, there was a newly federally commissioned government report issued Friday on how climate change is already disrupting the health, homes, and other facets of daily life, and is going to get much, much worse as time goes on unless massive changes are initiated right now. And in fact, people have been talking about this for 10 years, that, and it's been being paid lip service. It's not enough just to make more fuel-efficient cars. We've got to go much further than that.
So you would put that, Mike, as issue number one for you?
Yes, I would. Mm-hmm. I would say it's tantamount to a worldwide nuclear war.
Charles Lipson.
I think that the issue of who sets the political agenda is one of the most important questions that we can talk about. And the short answer in the United States, the short answer in England or France or Germany and so forth, is the topmost political leader. In this country, we didn't have immigration reform in the first 2 years of the Obama administration, because even though the president had won a vast victory and had control of both houses, because his priority was health care. And we didn't have as much action on the economy. Now, the president is not in sole control. The killings at Newtown, Connecticut, at Sandy Hook Elementary, have put gun control on the agenda. But the president is in charge. Now, the president went to a climate change, went personally, took a lot of people with him, invested a lot of political capital, and almost nothing came out of that in Copenhagen. And so what Mike is saying is the kind of citizen pressure that if politicians hear it, then they might be willing to do something. But one of the themes that I've been pushing during this discussion is that it is harder to get climate change to the top of the agenda when many and most people think that the agenda is jobs, and then right underneath that is dealing with the deficit, and then underneath that is the issue you took up first or second today, Kathleen, and that's immigration. So I think all of those issues get priority.
And thank you very much, Mike, for your call. All right, one more call. It's going to have to be quick, though, but I'm going to do it. Let's go to David in New Richmond. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Quick question would be, the average citizen, how is the average citizen going to get involved in politics? Why is it so important for incumbents to be reelected? We never hear them saying, I'm going to put in my 8 years, and this is who I recommend to take over my job. But why is it so important that these people get reelected? They think they're the only ones who can do the job. I'd like you to address professional politicians, I guess.
Boy, you've seen a huge movement for term limits in the past. My sense is that with the political divisions in Wisconsin, you have gotten huge amounts of popular involvement.
Oh, yes.
So public involvement is actually pretty high right now, but politicians seem to like the job.
Thanks very much, David, for the call. Well, Charles Lipson, it's been delightful. Thank you very much, as always, for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Kathleen. It's always fun to talk with you, but it's fun to talk with people all over Wisconsin. They have all kinds of questions and viewpoints, and it's great to hear them.
I agree. Thank you. Charles Lipson, our guest for All Things Political. He's a professor of political science at the University of Chicago. We keep getting updated information. The president is doing a press conference, and it's taking place for most of the second hour of our program today. But the time of the press conference has been pushed back until 10:20. What do you do? What do you do? It starts at 10:20. Well, I guess what we'll do is we'll lead up to the press conference. One of our callers this hour asked what the priorities should be for the administration in a second term, and I guess that we can ask you that question. What do you think the priorities should be as the president begins his second term? It is the final press conference of his first term. It is this morning, but it's not taking place until 10:20. So we will be with you until 10:20. We were going to be talking about Pioneers of Television, which starts tomorrow. Saw some great comedy over the weekend watching one of those shows, but that will be tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And then if I can fill your minds with one more piece of information, former Senator Russ Feingold will be with us tomorrow at 9 o'clock. So stay with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who produces this program. News is coming up.